Welcome to Locked On Warriors, your podcast on all things Warriors. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg, Warriors beat reporter for the Mercury News. Today's show is brought to you by Rock Auto. Go to rockauto.com to get all the parts you need for your car or truck at a reliably low price. On today's episode, I'll talk about an option the Warriors have for their closing lineup and then get to some listener mail. And with NBA award voting ending tomorrow, I want to take a look at Eric Paschal's chances to make the all-rookie team. But before I do that, I just want to start today's episode by making a quick correction to something that I said at some point last week on the show about the traded player exception, about the trade exception that the Warriors have. They have a $17.2 million trade exception set to expire in late October. And I have said probably a few times that that exception could be used only on one player. Now, I checked with a few different people about that, and that's not true. They can actually, the Warriors can split that among several different players. So they don't have, it doesn't expire if they use it on one player who, say, makes $10 million, right? So, for example, I was asked about Tomas Satoransky in the mailbag on Friday, and he's a $10 million salary, I believe, for next year. And if the Warriors were to absorb Satoransky into their TPE, they would have $7.2 million or thereabout left over to use on another player before the expiration date on the TPE, which I believe is October 24th. So I wanted to just clear that up. Now, I did some digging this morning and just to see what kind of multiplayer trades would be available for that TPE. I don't see many options for Golden State, and I still believe that they want to use that on probably one player, not only because they want to maximize that, and, you know, generally speaking, the more expensive the player, the better the player is. You know, there are obviously some exceptions to that, but they're also going to need roster spots. I don't know if they're going to want to pay two additional players. It's one thing to go find a player at, like, let's say Rudy Gay at $14 million. Do you really want to be using, you know, another $3 million on some player who probably isn't going to crack the rotation? I don't know. I mean, you could spend half of that on a minimum contract guy who gets just as many minutes and might even be a better player. So it depends. It depends on what's available for Golden State. But at least it's out there. At least it's an option. I just wanted to make that correction ahead of today's show. Now, as far as Eric Paschal's all-rookie team consideration goes, I wrote last week for the Mercury News in a story I did on his candidacy that he was a lock to make one of the first two all-rookie teams, sorry. And after writing that, I went and read John Hollinger's piece for The Athletic about that kind of breaks down his award ballot, and he left off Paschal on both of his all-rookie teams. He didn't have Paschal on his first team. He didn't have Paschal on his second team. I think that's possibly an oversight, maybe not awarding a player who got a lot of minutes and a lot of usage on the worst team in the league, you know, last year, the Warriors. And so maybe it's a combination of those two things. But I do still think that Paschal deserves an all-rookie selection. Most people, by the way, that I've either talked to or heard from or read, they have Paschal at least on the second team. I think his biggest competition for the first team is Zion Williamson, which, you know, Zion played 19 games. Paschal led the Warriors in minutes played this year. And Zion didn't do that for New Orleans, but Zion was no doubt, you know, one of the best, not one of the best rookies in the league, but one of the more sensational players in the league when he was healthy. I think for the first team, the locks are Ja Morant, Kendrick Nunn, and Brandon Clark. I think those guys are locks to make the first team. And then it really depends on what you think of Zion's candidacy. Does playing in such a small sample of games qualify him for that first team? Other guys that could be in the mix for that fifth spot: Terrence Davis from Toronto, Matisse Thybul from the Sixers, Cody Martin, PJ Washington from the Hornets, Cameron Johnson from the Suns, Kobe White from the Bulls. There's a lot of guys. There's some decent rookies. Tyler Hero from the Miami Heat. A lot of guys who can make one of the first or second all-rookie teams. I still think Paschal deserves it. I know he played for the worst team in the league. I know he's not going to see nearly as many minutes, and he might have been a product of those minutes. He might have been a product of the usage just as much as anybody. But I spoke with Bob Myers last week for that article that I wrote, and he said one of the eye-opening moments for the organization was that game against Portland when Pascal had, 34 points, 13 rebounds in that win against the Trailblazers in November. And that was a huge win. That was after the Steph Curry injury. That was, the Warriors were reeling. And they pulled out a huge win at home at Chase Center. And after that, the Warriors put the ball in Eric Pascal's hands a lot more. And so it could have been anybody that could have gotten an increased usage. We saw guys, Glenn Robinson, Alec Burks, like these guys had increased usage, but they didn't put up the numbers that Pascal put up. I mean, 2 30-point performances days after he made his NBA debut. You got to give him some credit for that. He was Golden State's rock, and I think that deserves some credit. I don't know if it's good enough to make the first team. I tend to, in awards and in just sort of thinking about things historically, I maybe overvalue just peak performances, just like the absolute peak of a player's career or season or anything like that. I just think the highest of highs in the NBA is so hard to reach that I tend to give that a little bit more value than just consistency. Even though I give consistency, obviously, it's due. I do give an inordinate amount of value to just peak. And so for that reason, I think Zion's peak this season was very, very high. Okay, you can argue he's one of the best 15 players in the league at part. He was unbelievable when he was healthy and playing. I mean, he had New Orleans ready to make a playoff run. All right, you got to give a lot of value to that. You have to give a lot of credit to that. But you still have to give a lot of credit to Pascal for what he was able to do. And it matters that he was a second-round pick. It matters that he wasn't supposed to do any of that stuff. So I know ballots are due tonight across the NBA for those people who have award ballots. And I hope that they vote Pascal at least onto the second team. And he's got a case for the first team. If you don't believe in Zion sample size, and by the way, he doesn't have to replace Zion. He can replace a Terrence Davis, right? You can have Ja Morant, Kendrick Nunn as your backcourt. I use Terrence Davis as another guard because this class is just tends to be deeper in guards than forwards. But you don't have to have Tyler Hero or Kobe White or Matisse Thybulle on there. You can have Ja Morant, Kendrick Nunn, Eric Pascal, Zion Williamson, Brandon Clark. Like that is a fair first teamer. So if that's what you want to make your first team, that's good. I mean, and I'll end it with this. Pascal was fourth among rookies in scoring, fifth among rookies in rebounding, fifth in field goal percentage, ninth in free throw percentage, ninth in minutes per game, and 10th in assists. So all top 10 numbers, several in the top five. The only rookie to rank in the top five in scoring, rebounding, and field goal percentage. So he's efficient too. This was not just him getting the ball a lot, okay? And he made notable progress as the season went on, which I think also matters a lot. Eric Pascal also has a chance to be in next season's closing lineup, and I'll talk about that next. But first, let's talk about Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing number of vehicle makes and models, it can be impossible to stock all the parts you need for your car, especially now, while you may not be able to visit a traditional store. So do it easily online at rockauto.com. Rockauto.com is a family business, serving auto parts to customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything you need, from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low without the markup you find at chain stores. So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. So I mentioned I talked to Bob Myers last week about Pascal's all-rookie case. I also spoke with him at length about Pascal's role next season and what the Warriors have tasked Pascal to do this offseason. And the number one thing that both Bob Myers and I spoke to Pascal, what Pascal said, the one priority that he has this summer is to fix that three-point shot, to make it so that he is in the mid-30 percentage. He needs to stop jumping so much. He wants to increase the arc on that three-point shot. It's been written about and reported throughout the season. He is doing that. He is committed to that now during the offseason when he's not playing. And, talking with Pascal, he said that the shot is pretty much there. It's just a matter of repetition. It's just a matter of using it in a game, in a competitive setting, right? And just getting used to it. And that's only going to happen when the season restarts. And when the season, when next season starts, Pascal has a chance to be within Golden State's closing lineup. That's not breaking news. I think right now, if you look at the Warriors roster, Pascal is definitely one of their five best players. And so the Warriors, you know, under Kerr, have basically just put their five best players out there to close games. And to close halves, typically, too. So I think if you're going to end, you know, the last 4 to 6 minutes of every half with their best lineup, which I think is going to be their death lineup with Draymond Green at center, Pascal has a good chance of playing the four in that lineup. But only if he can get that three-point shot to go. Again, mid-30 percentages. That's probably the target there. That's the target. Now, all of a sudden, it spaces the floor. You have to respect him beyond the arc. He is tremendous at attacking closeouts, Pascal is. Getting to the rim, finishing through contact, drawing fouls. Like, we know all these things. And it's things that Bob Myers thinks would be really valuable in that sort of lineup. Especially when you lose Kevin Durant. You want a guy who can create his own shot. And Pascal certainly can do that, right? Not obviously to the level that Durant can, but he has that ability. And they're going to need that, the Warriors. And so, obviously, a lot of things depend on what happens this offseason. Who do the Warriors draft in the top five? What do they do with the top five pick? Who do they get with the TPE? What do they do in free agency with the mid-level exception and minimum contracts? Like, right now, Pascal is one of their five best players, but he might not be next year. I think the guy who could supplant him is whoever they acquire with the TPE. Now, that said, Pascal is going to have the opportunity to play in that closing lineup. And he makes a lot of sense. And it's something the Warriors want. If everything worked out, they would have him in the closing lineup. Now, maybe it's a situation where they have some options. Pascal against certain matchups, whoever they acquire at the TPE in other matchups. That's certainly a possibility, right? Like that, when you don't have Durant as that fifth starter, you might have to play a little mix and match a little bit more. I mean, they're most likely that fifth player is not going to be an all-star player. Unless they do something crazy with this TPE with a bridge buy of some kind, that player is not going to be an all-star player. So, you know, you're going to have Pascal, you're going to have the TPE, maybe somebody at the mid-level, whatever. So you're going to be able to, you know, go with different closing lineups depending on the matchup, which will be very valuable, especially now that the West is way more competitive with a lot more diversity too, might I add. I mean, you've got the Rockets playing historically small. You've got the Lakers now with LeBron James in the Western Conference with Anthony Davis on his team. You're going to have to play big against them. The Clippers can kind of do both, but they're a little smaller, right? So you might want to use more wings against them. And then obviously you've got Denver. You've got New Orleans with Zion. They can make a jump next year. And Dallas can make a jump next year too. And they're revolutionary with the way they use Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis. So you're going to have to use a certain lineup against them too. That's probably a little bit less traditional. And so with all of that, you may need some more versatility. Pascal is versatile if, of course, he can get that three-point shot to go. But he is versatile, right? They've played him at the three and the four. They could even play him at the five a little bit if they want to take Draymond off the floor, if they have to, or if Draymond's injured. Like, they've got options with Pascal, and I think that's the key, is his versatility. And so I thought that was really, to me, interesting talking to Bob last week was how they want Pascal to be in that starting lineup. And it's not just the three-point shot, I'll add. The playmaking that started to develop toward the end of the year, that needs to get better too. I asked Pascal about that, and he said that he really enjoys playmaking, that he learned to, you know, take that extra dribble, be a little bit more patient, let the plays come to him, let the game come to him, and not have to force things as much. The game slowed down, in other words, for Pascal, and that's a huge development for him. So if he could become a better playmaker, sort of, we exist within the ecosystem of Steve Kerr's offense a little bit more naturally and get that three-point shot to fall, he's got a really good chance of being in the Warriors' closing lineup next season. We get to some mail next. This is Locked On Warriors. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Warriors on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Please review, rate, and say nice things. Thanks to Rock Auto for sponsoring the show. You could send your comments and questions to me on Twitter at WC Goldberg or email them to me at wgoldberg@bayareanewsgroup.com. Over the last couple of weeks, I've asked you, the listener, to send me an email about a time you met a current or former Warriors player, coach, front office person, whatever. Just a story that you may have. We know the Warriors are out and about quite a bit. They're very involved in the community. They're very much a part of the community. And I'm sure a lot of you listening have stories of maybe meeting these guys that you want read on the pod. If you do, email that story to me, wgoldberg@bayareanewsgroup.com. I have a story I want to get to, but first, before we get to that, I just want to say that, not related to the Warriors, but sort of, I mean, the Miami Marlins had half their roster this morning test positive, basically, for COVID-19. And they're going to have to cancel at least one game, probably two, and this is a developing story, but it's something that we should monitor. Even as you Warriors fans, me as an NBA reporter, right? Like, this is something we need to watch because all this stuff is connected. I know it's Major League Baseball, but it's all connected because you better believe the NBA is watching baseball and how their regular season is playing out right now. I know they've got the bubble. The bubble's great. The bubble is working so far. Congratulations. Next season's not going to be played in a bubble, folks. The bubble is a one-time thing. Next season's not going to be played in a bubble. They need to figure out right now how they're going to play next season. And they have these plans of maybe starting December 1st. We've heard reports that it's more likely on Christmas. I have my doubts that we're going to see any basketball in December. And this is just me guessing, but it's an educated guess. If we don't get a vaccine until December or January, that doesn't even include the rollout of the vaccine, the getting, you know, all of America vaccinated. That doesn't include any of that stuff. And maybe California gets its act together and the virus subsides by December, but that doesn't mean Florida and Atlanta and all these other places with spikes, Texas, it doesn't mean that they're going to have their stuff in order. So what, the Warriors are just not going to travel to those states? No, of course not. If you're gonna do the regular season, you're going to have to do the regular season. We're going to see something with Major League Baseball here in hours or days that they're going to have to make a decision. Because if the Marlins can't play and they infect the Atlanta Braves and the Philadelphia Phillies, who they played this past weekend, well, now this thing is just spreading. And I don't know that you can hold a regular season with the typical type of travel that Major League Baseball is attempting here. And if you're the NBA, I don't know that just months from now that it changes at all if we don't have a vaccine or herd immunity or any of this stuff. I have my doubts about next season being played. Like anytime soon, like this year. I'm not just talking about, you know, games without fans or anything. You're still, if you're an NBA team, you're going to have to travel to arenas with or without fans in those arenas. I don't know that you can do that because we just saw with Major League Baseball, they don't have fans in the arenas. Turns out it's not the fans that you need to worry about. The fans are in the stands, okay? The reason you don't bring them in arenas is so that fans don't congregate and infect each other. But that's nothing to do with the players. The players could still infect each other and then you don't have any sport at all. And that might be what happens with Major League Baseball. They might not be able to conclude the 60-game season that they're attempting. And if you're the NBA... yes, the bubble is working so far. Best case scenario is it works and you're able to complete your season and you're able to name a champion. And then the work really begins to try to figure out how you're going to get next season to start. And it's one thing for the NBA to be able to put a bubble together and create this world where they're able to keep guys quarantined and keep people safe. But now, to really start a season... for the NBA, for Major League Baseball, for the NFL, for college football, for college sports in general, that requires national leadership and a national control of this pandemic, which we just haven't seen yet. Let's get to the mail. This comes from Casey. Hey, Wes, in the early 90s when I was 12, I met Tim Hardaway at a card show. I was getting over a bad cold, so my mom wasn't going to let me go, but after some serious begging, she relented. We waited in line for over an hour for Tim to sign my copy of a Beckett magazine. I finally got to the front and proudly plopped my Beckett on the table in front of him, thinking I was real, quote-unquote, meta, since the cover showed a smiling photo of Tim holding up his own basketball card and pointing at it. He asked my name, but before I could utter a word, I breathed out a huge, dry booger right onto a glossy magazine cover that he was about to sign. Everyone saw it. My mom saw it. The other kids in line saw it. Even Tim's handler saw it and landed right next to Tim's finger in the photo, making it look like he was pointing and smirking at my booger. I was mortified. The room fell silent, waiting for Tim to lose it. He casually reached over and brushed the booger off the cover, then signed it like it never happened. Grinning, he said, "Thanks for making it out today," as if he knew that I was too sick to be out of the house, then handed me the Beckett. To this day, it's still the classiest thing I've ever seen anybody do. Casey includes a photo of the signed magazine. Great story, Casey. Thanks for sending. If you have a story you want read on the pod, send it to wgoldberg@bayareanewsgroup.com. Thanks for listening, and stay safe.